Welcome to episode 201 of Industry Misinterpretations with James Robertson and Michael Lucas Smith. This week, we're both talking about the websites that we've recently set up. I set my new site up back in December, and Michael just set up an interesting site 2 days ago, and he's using kind of an interesting technological mix of things to get that going. If you have feedback on this or any other episode of Industry Misinterpretations, please send it to smalltalkpodcasts@syncom.com. You can also head on over to iTunes and leave a comment for us. We would really appreciate it if you did that. You can head on over to Podcast Alley, cast a vote for the podcast. And of course, you can interact with us in the Industry Misinterpretations group at Facebook and the Small Talkers group at Ning. So what we're putatively here to talk about is the new site you've set up and, to some extent, the site I set up last December. So let's talk about yours a little bit first. Your site is running a little differently than most people. I mean, I'm running on a VPS, and I'm running the blog server I've been running for years on it. So while I could talk a little bit about why I set that up, yours is more interesting just from a technology standpoint. You only sort of have a server.
Okay, so I've moved my blog, which has been hosted by your software for years.
Yeah, like 7 years now, I think.
Yeah, but, almost as soon as I had a blog and started using it, I wanted really to have my own blog. But that's never been particularly feasible because, well, your software wasn't really designed to be reused. Let's just put it that way. And it's not until kind of recently that you've even done anything toward making it more reusable, deployable outside of a Syncom environment and all that kind of stuff when you set up your own blog. But when you did that, I wasn't particularly thrilled with the idea of getting a VPS that had enough grunt to actually run that. And when I talk about getting a VPS with not much grunt, I mean, I've got a machine that has 80 megabytes of RAM. So that is my VPS. It's tiny.
You've got a VPS of sorts. Who is that from?
That's from Ramhost.
Okay, so you've got that one we talked about earlier.
Yeah, it's the Nano. It's ridiculously small. Right. And that's why I got it. It's so cheap and so small that I just had to have it. And I wasn't going to use it for this blog. I wanted to get a solution that would allow me to have no server at all, at least in the traditional sense. And in many respects, I've done that. The only thing that I have running on Ramhost is a program called HAProxy, which is High Availability Proxy. It's basically a HTTP proxy for multiple backends.
So you're not even running Apache?
No, I got no web server on there at all.
Okay, so explain what the infrastructure actually is. How does, when you go to michaellucassmith.com, what actually happens?
Well, you pick up index.html from Dropbox. So if you've never used Dropbox before, I highly recommend it. And this is not meant to be an advertising blog, but it's awesome. So let me just explain it for a second. It's basically integrates with Linux, Windows, and Mac. It has a local folder or folders that it will keep synchronized between your machines, as well as keeping that stuff synchronized on their server. And their server is actually just hosted on S3, Amazon S3. And then they've got a web front end to your files, so you can access them on your iPhone and in a web browser. And they've also got a public section in your folder that you can put files and they'll get a public URL.
Yeah, as an aside as to why I think it's kind of cool too, you actually pay for extra service on that. You get 2 gigabytes free from them. And kind of the neat thing about that public service is I've used that to transfer presentations that I didn't feel like sitting in front of my Mac to watch, move them, you know, exported them out to PDF, thrown them into Dropbox, and then downloaded them to my iPad so that I could move around and watch the presentation on the iPad while I was listening to a phone conference. I mean, Dropbox is useful for multiple things.
Yeah, I mean, actually, I use 1Password to keep all of my confidential details and passwords and stuff on my computer. And you can actually use the way they programmed 1Password, they had things like Dropbox in mind, you can actually just drop the save file in Dropbox and 1Password will sync across all your machines as well. And now they've upgraded the 1Password thing for the iPhone to sync off Dropbox as well. And they're making a Windows version. So I'll have all of my passwords and confidential information on all of my machines synchronized all the time. It's going to be great.
So what you're doing is you're actually running the back end insofar as it exists. The actual blog posts are living in Dropbox.
Well, technically Amazon S3. So all of the blog posts are just HTML files sitting in a directory. The blog itself is a tiny piece of HTML that contains almost nothing. Actually, let me bring it up and I'll take a look, because it's kind of funny when people think about HTML, they think about giant blobs of crap, and that's not at all what I have.
Well, and you think about blog engines that are out there. I mean, you think about the thing I wrote, which is not that huge, but it's big-ish. And then you think about these massive things like WordPress, and you're running a perfectly serviceable site on, what, this trivial amount of stuff.
Right, so my HTML is a head tag with a title saying loading, which updates once it's loaded. A link to my CSS, a link to some CSS for the comment box, a link to my Atom feed, a link to jQuery the scripts, a link to my script. Then in the body, I've got a div called logo, a div called location, div called index, and div called content, and there's nothing in those at all. And that's the entire HTML file. All the real magic happens in my JavaScript file. And this is kind of where it gets interesting, because it will use the search part of the URL, the question mark area, to go and fetch the content off Dropbox on your client side. So on the client, you're basically going and fetching stuff from the services. It also takes the URL for the post and calls tiny URL to generate a tiny URL using JSONP. It also uses some JavaScript to pull in the comment box.
And from the perspective of a VPS, what that really means is that since you're offloading all the fetch work to the client, you're not paying any of those bandwidth charges. So, you know, whatever you pick, what is a RAM host for your VPS? So they're giving you whatever it is per month, which you paid for the smallest one, so it's not much.
It's actually quite a bit, but
okay,
yeah, not much.
But whatever it is, if you were to go over it, they start charging you more. And the way you've set it up, there's basically no way you're going to go over it.
Right. So your client downloads the site index as well, which is like a 40K file, which is smaller than many people's whole websites.
Yes.
And that's, of course, compressed along the way as well, so it's actually pretty small indeed. And then JavaScript, you know, rips that apart and generates the year index on the left-hand side of the page. So it's really just downloading stuff and having the client process it. And because it's all the UI is driven by the client, I've got some nice fancy animations in there and stuff like that as well. And the reason that HA proxy exists at all, actually, can you guess?
Just so that index.html works, so that your base URL works, I think.
Right. With both S3 and with Dropbox and with many of these file hosting services, you don't get the option to have slash go to one of your files. It just comes up
right by default with a quote unquote real web server. If you go to blah.com, it'll assume blah.com and blah.com/index.htm or HTML, and you had to slap in that bit of JavaScript to make, oh, not JavaScript, HA proxy to make that work.
Yeah, actually, just give me a second. I'll connect to my RAM host and check the rule on that, like, because I think I only put two rules in. So let's have a look at HA proxy conf. Right, so rule number one is anything going to my URL that is more than just slash gets redirected to my Dropbox. And if it's just straight slash, it's redirected to my Dropbox /index.html. So two rules. That's the only reason HA proxy exists. If that could be done on Dropbox in a config setting somewhere, I wouldn't be using my VPS for anything.
Right. Now, I pretty much, the funny thing is you were all set to go with this until I mentioned that was the problem you were going to run into. And ironically, the way I realized that was a problem is not that I was interested in this kind of solution at all. I mean, I'm running a full VPS with a back-end blog server, as I have been for years. I was reading a post from Dave Weiner, of all people. He's been interested in doing more or less what you're doing now, running something out of S3. And that was the roadblock you ran into, was the one you solved with HA proxy sitting on RAM host.
Well, I actually solved it a different way to start with. I use GoDaddy as my domain registration, and they can do forwarding, but they also have domain masking, which I'd never heard of before, and I looked into it and it looked pretty neat. Basically, you have a URL, your domain, and then you point that to another site, but the web page still thinks you're on your site. So I set that up and I was using that, and as I got into it more and more, I started discovering how crap this actually is. What it does on their side, when you go to your URL, they generate a frame set as the HTML response, and the frame set pulls in the remote site that you were masking. And it means that every page that you go to is always your root domain. You can't have a URL space there. And Google pretty much won't index the site because it's just a whole bunch of frames.
Which is a bad thing. You don't want to be not indexed.
A very bad thing. That's right.
You might as well be invisible if you're going to do it that way.
So I basically decided, I can't do that. That's just a non-solution. And I really had to basically think of a good way to set up this site. So HAProxy turned out to be a good answer there. Otherwise, I probably would have... if Amazon supplied something like this, like on EC2, that didn't cost an arm and a leg, I would use that. I would much prefer if Dropbox provided a way for me to deal with the straight slash. And if they provided me with a way to deal with the straight slash, then... that would be it. That would kind of solve my problem.
Well, you know, the funny thing is, it doesn't seem to me that Amazon's even interested in that end of the business. You know, you look at their pricing, and it looks inexpensive until you start adding up the bandwidth charges you're going to incur if you ran a real website out of EC2. I mean, you can do it, but it's not something you want to do for any kind of long-term solution.
No, that'd be pretty expensive.
I mean, the only way you want to do it, I guess, is if you're doing what Dropbox does. You run an entire business on Amazon service, and then you charge, you know, your business model for it, and then just feed the charges back through. Although I'm not even sure how it works for Dropbox. I mean, they charge way less than Amazon does. I'm not sure how that works.
Okay, let me just give you an example of how much I'm paying. I'm gonna find the pricing on Ramhurst. The Nano, which is their smallest thing, gives you 80 megabytes of guaranteed RAM. 128 megabytes of burstable RAM if you go over the 80 megabytes for a short period of time, 2 gig of disk space, 50 gigabytes of transfer. So 50 gigabytes, that's quite a lot, you know, for a blog. Given that all I'm doing is acting as a proxy, I'm not going to hit that anytime soon.
Right, right.
The cost to run this is $2.99 a month.
Which is significantly less than I'm paying. I mean, I'm paying on Slicehost, which I'm quite happy with, I should add. I'm paying $38 a month, and I'm probably paying for more server than I need. I think I'm paying for half a gig of memory, and I don't remember how much bandwidth.
See, I think you should drop that because, okay, the standard... Actually, let's go for the extra, the largest VPS they provide at Ramhost. Guaranteed memory, 1 gig, a burstable memory, 1.5 gig, disk space, 80 gig, data transfer, 800 gig, costs $19.99 a month.
Right. Slicehost gave me a few more things out of the box, though, I think, than Ramhost did. Ramhost expects you to be able to put more of the pieces together yourself.
Yeah.
So, I mean, Slicehost did get me started. I'm not really interested in plugging all the pieces together. I had to do more plugging the pieces together than I wanted. I mean, when I set one up, I put a blog post up about this. I got a 64-bit Linux engine, and I had to put in the 32-bit library so that I got stuff like VisualWorks running the way I wanted it to run. But, you know, that was really the only piece I had to plug in. And then the other thing that I had to get going, since I'm not anything resembling an expert on this, on rewrite rules, is I had to figure out how to structure the Apache rule set to do what I wanted it to do. But I was looking at something a little simpler than what you're looking at. You're actually redirecting your old blog from Syncom over to the new one, although you're not redirecting the old posts. Those are still living where they are, and all the old
posts. Well, I totally changed the URI space.
Right, you changed the URI space. So the old posts, if you link directly to one of his old posts, it's going to still come up.
And now, a short break for David Buck's Design Minute.
This is David Buck with today's Cimbron Design Minute. Namespaces are supposed to make it easier to mix different components of an application together without worrying that the class names in one component are going to clash with the class names from another component. They can do that, but only if they're used properly. We ran across a case in VisualWorks where the ComConnect classes were referencing a class called Note. The Note class was in the Smalltalk.tools namespace, and the references were in other namespaces like smalltalk.external. The references were being resolved by having an import of smalltalk.star. As it turns out, the client had a class called Note, and when the ComConnect classes were loaded, they tried connecting to that class instead and started failing. If you want to make sure your names don't conflict, you have to make sure the namespace resolution doesn't take a shortcut and find classes you didn't expect. This has been the Cimbron Design Minute. Cimbron offers training and consulting in object-oriented development and the Smalltalk programming language. For more information, visit www.cimbron.com or email info@cimbron.com.
And now, back to the regular podcast.
Well, I just want to explain how it is that posts get up on my new site now.
Okay, go ahead.
So, with your setup and with most blog server setups, you can use a blog posting tool. More specifically, you pretty much have to, or use a web form, a blog posting tool.
There's some people that, do an email thing, but then you have to have an email configuration set up on the back end, but yes.
Yeah, but there are like a plethora of protocols, none of which are straightforward and standard.
They all suck equally, yeah. They just suck differently.
That are used to send the post to the server, and you implemented a bunch of them, and on your server, you know, it generates an ID for the post, and puts the post up and updates the RSS feed and all that kind of stuff. I don't have a server, so I can't do that. And it turns out I don't need to do that, and the solution turns out to be a hell of a lot simpler. Virtually no moving parts. What I do is I can just open up any editor that can write out HTML and write my post and save it into a directory inside my Dropbox. Dropbox then synchronizes it everywhere, which is it only really needs to synchronize it to its S3 component, but you know, as a nice added bonus, I can use any of my computers to post blog posts. The next thing I do is I need to update the contents.index and I need to regenerate the atom feed, which turns out to be a very simple bash script that I wrote, which is called update.sh. And what I did is I used folder actions on my Mac to run an Apple script that listens to adding and removing items from the folder. So as soon as I save the file into the folder, my bash script runs and everything gets updated. Dropbox synchronizes everything and the website's up to date.
See, now I figured you were going to be running some kind of back-end cron job on your RAM host for that, but no, you're running all that as client-side folder actions on your Mac.
Well, to do that, you know, then my RAM host would need to synchronize into my Dropbox, which would kind of defeat the purpose.
Well, or you could theoretically run a cron job that woke up, say, every 10 or 15 minutes and checked to see if there was a new post. But yeah, it'd be a little more complicated.
Yeah, this is just ridiculously simple. I mean, it's just, I don't know how to, you know, to describe how easy it was. When it was sort of, it started off as a sort of a personal challenge. Can I do this without a server at all? And that was really what I, you know, a traditional in the sense of a blog server, any kind of server software built for running a blog or a website running, you know, could I just do it with off the shelf bits and pieces? And the answer is yes.
Well, it kind of illustrates something else too. I mean, you know, I've written a blog server, and while it does exactly what I want, and as you said, I had to clean it up a little bit when I migrated it from the CINCOM server over to my Slicehost server because there were some things that were very specific to that setup. This is the way software always works. When you build it as a one-off on one server, you start to creep in things that are very specific to the directory setup and the Apache server setup and all the other stuff. And it's only when you move it that you learn about all the little things you didn't do right. So once I got it off to the Slicehost, everything was working fine. But if you look at things like my blog server and then you look at things that are even bigger like Movable Type and WordPress and all these systems, it kind of tells you how much overkill some of these systems are. I mean, compared to what you've done here, this is a very small
piece. Well, they use databases, right?
Right. Well, I don't use a database, but yeah, I mean, most of these services use a database.
You use something much more complicated. In fact, you use an object marshalling system to write out files.
Well, it was simpler for me. I mean,
I know, but like if you look at it from the high level, if you're using Active Record, you can say a database is simple as well. But if you look at it from the high level, what you do for your persistence is more complicated than a database.
It is, except that it also makes it much easier for me to move things around because everything's just a file. I don't have to worry about synchronizing databases and backing
databases.
Yeah,
but it's even easier for me because mine are just HTML files.
Yours are just sitting in the file system, so it's even easier. But that's my basic theory, is that if it's sitting in the file system, it's easier to back up. But yeah, yours is even a step down scale from mine. Well, all I'm saying is, if you look at all the various blog servers, mine included, we're taking a sledgehammer to solve something that, I don't know, you picked up a fly swatter for.
Yeah. So challenge met. I really wish that I could get rid of the HA proxy bit, just to kind of finally say there is no server at all. I'm just using off-the-shelf services in the cloud. You know, it might be worth talking a little bit about these services that I'm calling on the client side for a second.
Yeah, well, you've done. Go ahead and explain that, because this is you've got a very cloud integrated system here, so it's very web. I don't know, 2.0 or 3.0 or however much.
I don't know what
you want to talk about.
It's just cloud, yeah. I mean, so for one, all of my files are sitting on S3. Okay, so that's very cloudy to begin with. But the next part is I was actually kind of content to have my blog server have no comments whatsoever. I really like getting feedback from people, but I was also kind of thinking I could just stick my email address on there and post more often when people will send me emails as replies to their questions.
Is that if you put comments in there, keep in mind that you then have to start worrying about spam.
Right. So I thought, okay, are there any cloud services out there for doing comments on websites? I knew there had to be, and that I could manipulate and use for my own purposes. And I came across multiple, and I settled on one called HTML Comment Box, and it's running on Google App Engine.
Okay.
And it's basically just a JavaScript script that you include on your page, and you can give it a div to put itself into, but normally it will comment on the page that you're on. Now, because I'm running a blog where the very front page shows a blog entry, I needed to modify the way their script runs so that I use my blog URL, the post URL, not the current window URL for the comments. So that was a little bit of trickery there. But besides that, it gives me moderation. It has a token from my Google login ID so that the moderation gets done that way.
So you outsource that entire problem.
Yeah, it's all completely outsourced. It's sitting in, you know, the Google database thingamajiggy running on Google App Engine as Python somewhere, and I don't care. It's not my problem. It might become my problem if I ever wanted to export all the data or they shut their service down. But
right, now that's the one worry I always had about those sorts of things, is that all those comments then are somebody else's property in a sense. I mean, you theoretically own them, but still, they're hosted elsewhere.
But I decided that I'm just not that concerned.
Yeah. Again,
so the next
it is comments. It's not actually your content. If it was your content, you could worry more. But like you said, all your stuff is just files, and you've got all that.
Yes, exactly. The next toy I integrated with, I should say at this point that originally with the masking, as far as the web browser was concerned, I was running on the Dropbox website. So I could do JSON gets from the Dropbox website, and that would be non-cross-domain fetching. But as soon as I had to stop doing the masking and use HAProxy, I'm actually on two different sites, so I can't use the same technique there anymore. Not really that big a deal. Anyway, it kind of rolls into this next part of the story, which is I wanted to use Bitly or TinyURL to make the small shareable URLs for my posts, because they're long, right? It's the http://michaellucasmith.com/index.html ?
And then your titles are enormous, actually, because you include all the spaces in them.
That's right. So it's a big thing. So I wanted a short URL. So I wanted to use JSON to go and use a service on Bitly. They're kind of a group that wants you to have a token authentication key and all that kind of crap.
OAuth, basically,
tiny URL,
is what that's using, right?
I don't know.
Something like that, anyway. Go on.
Tiny URL is ridiculously simple. It's like you just post to this form, and then that's...
Yeah, I wrote a Smalltalk interface to Tiny URL in I think, 15 minutes at one point.
Well, I couldn't use JSON for it because it would be cross-site scripting, but someone had already set up a JSONP interface, which is like a JSON interface, except you can use GET straight to it. And so I just used that on the client side to shrink down the URL. If that server fails, then the URL actually stays as the long one. So it's got a nice fallback.
Right. It'll die gracefully.
Mm-hmm. And that's kind of the whole story there. You set this up.
You told me you were interested in doing this like less than a week ago. I mean, you asked me to export all of your data out of the existing blog server. What was it? 2 days ago, maybe 3 days ago.
Yeah, I mean the first evening that I set about doing this, I had the blog running with masking. On the second day, I had the blog running with comments and without masking, and all the data imported from you. And on the third day, I added the Atom feed.
Right, and it turned out the exporting was actually pretty simple. I mean, even though you say that my back end is more complicated than it needs to be, as far as the files go that I save, all I save is BOSS files of blog post objects. And the interesting parts for you really were two pieces. The title, which is just a string in that post object, and then the text, which is also just a string in that post object. And the text was already mostly HTML or HTML fragments.
Yeah.
So all I did was you told me what format you wanted the export in, and I wrote a little exporter that I attached to the server so that if I ever wanted to do this kind of export again for anybody, I could dump stuff out easily enough the same way.
I mean, I think they call this sort of development, is it like dumpster diving for webs or something like that? But I mean, basically, I just pulled together a bunch of services. I mean, it was a nice experiment, and it actually paid off in the end, where, you know, just going full cloud here. And it's really nice that Smalltalk was able to play a part in that, in helping me get all that set up. I do actually run VisualWorks on that tiny little nano host with 80 megabytes of RAM. And that's an interesting thing. That's an interesting story in itself, and maybe we should touch on.
What are you running VisualWorks on there for?
Well, actually, to experiment with extremes.
Oh,
I have a remote site to do socket extremes stuff. And so the interesting story there is that I have a script that I run that takes the full install of VisualWorks and copies out just the absolute bare minimum for headless running and nothing else. And that I can zip up, and it's ridiculously small. It's like 8 megabytes, and then I can run that on the server in headless mode.
And how much memory does that take when you create that smallest possible image? I mean, you're not going all that aggressive and stripping things out, obviously, but how small does that get memory wise?
It is taking 25 megabytes of memory.
Okay, so 25 isn't bad.
No, and you know, you got to remember that I have 80 megabytes to play with.
How did you get the memory listing for the process?
Top.
Oh, top. Duh. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, duh.
It's been a while. Actually, VisualWorks on my slice host isn't even showing up in top.
You were sorted by memory instead of CPU. Press Shift-M.
Okay.
Actually, I'm going to check how big HAProx is.
Oh, yes. So I'm using a lot more memory than you. I think I'm using, according to this, on my server, I'm using 100 megabytes.
Well, that seems like more than you need.
It probably is, but I cache everything. Yeah, and
HAProx is using 3 megabytes of memory.
Yeah.
So
keep in mind that whole theory is that memory is cheap, and I've got tons of it on that server, and rather than worry about shrinking stuff down, I just cache absolutely everything in memory, and that way responses are really fast.
Well, see, I'm kind of a different mindset there. And yes, memory is cheap, but there's an artistry and fun in making stuff run in a minimalistic manner.
Yeah, I was always more from the lazy standpoint.
Yeah, but that's how Windows gets built.
That might be. But, you know, the thing is my server's been running pretty seamlessly since 2001. I mean, I've been – or 2002, rather. You know, not this server. That server's been running – actually, the funny thing is on Slicehost, my server has – the only time it's ever been down has been two times the Slicehost, and they were very good about this. They sent me emails way ahead of time telling me they had scheduled maintenance, you know, for critical updates they needed to do to their infrastructure. I guess probably some kind of security patches they were installing. But the only time my server's ever been down has been when Slicehost has had a mandatory outage. You know, it's never crapped out on its own.
Yeah, I've never had the RAM host go down.
Yeah, SliceHost has had two scheduled outages since December for me, and the last one was, I think, 3-4 months ago. But my server has never gone down. I mean, you know, it's you say it's inelegant, but, you know, the thing is it works. It's actually pretty damn stable.
No, well, I'm not really saying, you know, anything that actually works is elegant enough, but I'm talking about the challenge You know, I got a friend who makes games for Game Boy and Nintendo, like the old stuff,
right?
The old machines with limited memory and limited CPU, and it's fun, right? When you go and start programming on big machines like our desktop PCs, it's so easy to fall into the trap of thinking that you can just do anything you want.
Now you
want
to know what ruined me for that extent? I started out with an Apple 2 years ago, and I probably would have fallen into that same kind of try to fit things in small that you're talking about. But the first job I got programming was on a Cray.
Uh-huh, yeah.
And you know what? Nobody cared. I mean, seriously, nobody cared. We were just writing code to get it to work. I remember my sister was furious with me because I had a Cray that I had time on anytime I wanted it. She was working for a defense contractor and had to submit batch jobs a week in advance. It always kind of infuriated her that I was saying, yeah, I'm just sitting here on the Cray and, you know, just poking along, doing whatever I feel like.
Well, I mean, it's one of those things where...
But it kind of ruined me in that sense, because it got me used to the idea that there are no limits. So unlike your experience where you're talking about the elegance of doing things small, I kind of got the whole background of my programming was go big.
Well, see, I mean, the thing about going small is that if you can run efficiently on small, when you go big, you just scale forever. Like, it's one of those... Like playing with the physics engines. If you get the physics engine right... for a couple of objects and, like, really right, not just right, but really right, really efficient. You could scale it up to 10,000 objects and it keeps working just fine. But if you start off big, thinking, you know, to waste resources, not really thinking about how you're going to use your resources, you get satisfied with the ability to handle 100 to 1,000 objects in your physics engine and you can never go beyond that and also don't really have much left over for anything else you might want
to do. Now, to be fair, I never really thought about it that way with the blog server. What I did is I wrote it in the laziest way possible where every single access was reading directly from the file system and throwing it onto the page. And that worked fine when I had a small number of readers. And then... this must have been back in 2003. This is sometime in late 2003 or early 2004. I put up some posts that hit Dig, Reddit, and Slashdot all on the same day. And then the site got hammered into oblivion. And that was when I built the cache. And instead of building an interesting write-through cache, which, you know, the technology for that's not hard, but I just wrote the stupidest thing that could possibly work, which is let's just cache everything in memory. And then when people pull, it just comes straight out of memory. And we'll... as soon as I write a new post, I'll invalidate my page cache, and that's, you know, then it has to rebuild itself. It was simple. Even with posting for 7, 8, 9 years, you don't build up all that much stuff in memory terms. I mean, it's all just, from the standpoint of the server, what it is, it's text. You know, it's tiny.
And I'm not quite sure why it is that you use quite so much memory you do, given how little data there is.
Because some of the caching is inefficient. I built the caching in parts. Instead of having one unified cache system, I have like three of them sitting in there that really should be amalgamated down to one. there's at least three different caches in that server that should really not exist.
Yeah, so, you know, this is one of those interesting approaches where technical debt grows over time, but if there is no technology involved in the whole process, then you can't get the tech debt growing.
Right, although at this point there's not really that much technical debt for me because it's not like I'm selling this.
Well, no, okay, but let's not take your example. Let's take WordPress or... What's the other one?
Movable type. But WordPress is the big one. That's the one that's probably the most widely used one. And, yeah, you can see that every time there's a security hole that pops up, you can see what kind of technical debt has been incurred there because while they usually patch it pretty quickly, you look at some of their stuff, it's insanely hard to understand.
And this happens with everything. So if you can find, like, a simpler solution to the problem, like dumber, you know, maybe that's the real key here. It's just dumb.
Yeah. No, I agree.
Then you probably should just go with it.
Well, if I were to do this over again, I mean, there's no real reason for me to rewrite my blog server because it's not being sold. It's just something, for the most part, I use. And it works perfectly fine for my purposes. But if I were going to do it over again, it'd be a whole heck of a lot smaller.
Yeah, I mean, really, the only thing I wish I could have is that is not having HAProxy, and that would allow me to more flexibly have a website that wasn't just a blog. You know, now it's just really simple code. I can manipulate it any way I want and build it up into something else, and just keep pulling in more web services as required. And the great thing is that they're not horrible web services, like, you know, web services.
Right. Right. Now, actually, one question I do have about your site is, you know, it's easy enough for me to have static-ish pages like the About Me page I have on my site or the book review page that I have. So how hard is it for you to put up a static-ish page like that?
Well, obviously, it's just a piece of HTML.
Right.
I mean, it can't get much simpler than that.
Okay. Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, and you could change the URL structure for that easily enough based on the JavaScript you've got.
Well, I mean, take another example of something that's always was difficult before. Like, if I wanted to upload a video or some images with a blog post, a long time ago when I started using Dropbox, I immediately started using it for hosting all my movies and images, because I could just right-click on the file, copy public URL, and paste it into my post.
Right.
Using the technique that you originally provided, where you would upload files into some directory using some technique, and magically you would have to know the file name, and it just wasn't kosher. And it gets worse with other services where you kind of have to go through this weird gateway of uploading media and then the name changes and all kinds.
Well, they
of
all stuff. Every just, single I don't want to play every single game. One of these services. I mean, mine, most of the others. What they do is they have an assumption as to what the root location for all of that media is going to be. If you're going to upload, say, video, it's always going to start in /files or /video or /whatever. And then you can have whatever
and
you
honestly,
want.
Honestly, I could never
that.
Remember that, and I wasn't the only one.
Right? No. I know. Travis asked me all the time. You used to ask me all the time. Anybody who is uploading asked me all the time. The only one who remembered is me, and that's because I do it every stupid day.
Yeah, and you had to tell everybody every time.
Right. But I mean, the only reason I remember is because I do it so much. And to be honest, I don't even upload through the web form because I'm doing it every day. I just use FTP.
Right, so now I've just got files on my local disk. As soon as I finish making the movie, I just move it into my Dropbox folder, and then, you know, it's there. There's no mystery to it at all. It's just done.
Now, the only thing you do miss by doing it that way is by not having an integrated solution on the back end. If you had wanted to put out, say, an iTunes-enabled feed, you wouldn't have that.
Except that I can just add that to my bash script. I mean, basically, the bash script.
Well, you'd have to have your bash script create an iTunes-enabled RSS feed or Atom.
Yeah, but that's not actually hard at all.
No, I didn't say it's hard. You'd have to do it though.
Okay, so my bash script goes: go to my contents directory, cat /backback EOF, drop out the static bits of feed Atom junk, title links updated using the date command, author ID, EOF. ls-1 star.html sort reverse head number 10 while read file, parse the file name out to get the title, date, create an md5 sum using md5-q, create a UUID by parsing the md5, cat out backback EOF entry with the title, substitute in, update, substitute in, link, use the file name for that, ID, substitute in, content, cat the file, contents in there, close EOF, close feed, done. I mean,
so you'd have to add a few lines to get it to do an iTunes-enabled feed.
Well, yeah, maybe three or four. I mean, it's minuscule, right? I mean, that and the thing is that not only is it minuscule, that's completely 100% valid Atom 1.0. I went through and did the validator on it until I got it right so that it would work. In fact, the biggest bug that I had was that when you set the ID on the feed, and I thought the ID would be something used to identify the feed, not where the feed is, because obviously you've downloaded the feed.
Wait, the ID on the feed or the ID on the feed item?
The ID on the feed, because there's link rel self.
Oh, right.
So you can say, link rel self, this is where the feed is. And then you can do ID. Wait, how does this work again? There was some trick to this that I didn't understand. And the code doesn't seem to suggest that I fixed it the way I thought I fixed it. Oh, well, it works, whatever.
That's pretty much the way I've approached this stuff all along, is it works whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So I guess we've pretty much beaten that topic to death. So, you know, to summarize, you've got kind of the very much the less is more approach to a server, because you have as small a server as is humanly possible.
Yeah.
And I've got, you know, and just, I guess I should sum this up by explaining why I set mine up. And maybe if you're interested, you could say why you set yours up. I mean, I set mine up back in December because I finally decided that a fairly decent proportion of the posts I was putting up probably didn't really belong on a corporate site. I mean, when I decided to go off on one of my rants about DRM or copyright, that probably isn't the sort of thing that ought to be hosted on a CENTCOM site. You know, it's just, those are obviously my opinions. They're not corporate opinions, and they shouldn't even vaguely look like corporate opinions. So that's pretty much why I moved most of that stuff out, is I decided, you know, there's no real reason to associate CENTCOM with that stuff. There's no reason the CENTCOM needs to get a black eye if somebody takes objection to it.
No, mine wasn't for that. Mine was just pure ego. I wanted it to be my website.
Well, okay, so that was part of the reason for me. Yeah, so there was also a lot of ego involved on mine. I rather like having jarober.com.
Yeah, and I've had my URL sitting there for a while, and I just wasn't using
it. Well, I wanted James Robertson, but some environmentalist dude has that URL already, so I can't get it.
I just noticed that my news aggregator isn't running at all, so I need to restart it.
All right, so I guess that pretty much wraps it up.
Yep.
All right.
Not a very small talky podcast. Probably should point out the exciting news about
Instantiations. Yeah, we're trying to get somebody from Instantiations to come on the podcast. If I get any more news about that, I will update people on the blog.
Well, there you go. That was quick.
Bye.
Bye.
And now a short break for this week's Small Talk Jobs Report.
I'm James T. Savage, and this is the Small Talk Jobs Report. Hyderabad, Secunderabad, and Mumbai, India. Aris Infosoft is looking for 30 Smalltalk developers who also have experience with Java, C++, and Unix. Bangalore, India. Honeywell has a permanent position for a tech lead who has excellent communication skills and experience with OO programming and Smalltalk. They are looking for someone with a university degree in engineering, electronics or instrumentation, or computer science. It is considered a plus if you have experience with Cybel and industrial automation. Centurion, South Africa. Looking Ahead Recruitment has a permanent position for a junior programmer who has experience with OO programming, gathering requirements, has good communication skills, is able to work in a team environment, and project lifecycle experience. It is considered a plus if you have experience with Smalltalk. Quoting from the job posting, the candidate should have experience in an object-oriented language, example Java, C++, C#, Smalltalk. Smalltalk is not essential, and thorough training will be provided. The ability to develop quality software in teams and communicate well is more important. Walla Walla, Washington, USA. Key Technology is looking for a software engineer who has a degree or equivalent in computer engineering, electrical engineering, computer science, mathematics, and or related discipline, and has experience in an OO programming language. It is considered a plus if you have experience with Smalltalk. Quoting from the job posting, 1 year or relevant experience in Smalltalk, Java, and or C++ programming languages. The jobs listed in this report are just a few examples of the Smalltalk positions that are currently open across the world. For more details, visit our public directory page at xrl.us/smalltalkjobs. Or read my blog, Message Sends with an Undefined Object. Good luck with your job hunting.
If you enjoyed this week's podcast, please tell other people about it. We'd love to have more Smalltalkers and more developers learning about Smalltalk through the industry misinterpretation of the podcast. If you have feedback, send it to smalltalkpodcasts@cencom.com. Head on over to Facebook, join the Industry Misinterpretations group. Head on over to Ning and join the Smalltalkers group. Or head on over to Podcast Alley and cast a vote for the podcast. In the meantime, have fun with Smalltalk.
Okay, so let's podcast about StarCraft II.
I'm not sure if that really fits into the whole dynamic language. Actually, you know, the funny thing is I haven't been playing StarCraft II at all. I played a couple of games, and the problem is it looked so much like the original game that I just for some reason, I just couldn't get back into it.
Yeah, it's very, very similar to the original game.
Of all the stupid things, I went back to Dragon Age.
Oh, hang on a second. I got a phone call.